Okay. We want to thank you, Václav Havel, who take the, how you say it in English? How? Hospices of this conference.
Václav Havel apologizes for his absence. He is currently out shooting a film, but he wished he were here. We are here in the premises of DAMU, which is a theater academy, and we thank them for their hospitality. We want to thank all volunteers who are standing before you and who will spend the 2 days of the conference with us. So I need to thank also those who are here on the ground, sitting in very close proximity to us. Hope they will enjoy the conference too. And I want to thank all our media partners and people who designed our logos and the website. A v neposlední řadě, thank you all our four associations and all the people who helped us to pull this through. Thank you. Now a few housekeeping issues. The program is quite tight. We need to be careful in regards of our time planning. I apologize, we are not receiving the sound from the microphone into the interpretation booth. Names and workshops remain the same. What's in 202 will be in 302. In the timetable of the program, it's on the left-hand side, so please note the changes. And thank you for your patience and understanding. If you wanted to enroll in the workshops and you couldn't for the lack of place. Arnošt's workshop is now fully subscribed as for the regular 50 places which were opened, but additional 20 people can still attend if they are prepared to sit around on the stairs, etc., because the venue capacity is 70, but it will seat 50. Also, there are some mistakes in terms of language in which indicated in which workshops will be conducted. So Merkat will be in English, and Radana Sirovátková's workshop tomorrow will be in English too, with interpretation. In the case with most workshops is that even if a single non-Czech speaker attends, there will be some form of interpretation provided to them. Now, signposting. When you enter the foyer, not from the cafe side, but from the entrance, official entrance side, there are signs indicating the numbers of rooms where all the program is to happen. So just follow your chosen path and you'll get to your destination. It may look a bit labyrinthine, but it's not so complicated as it may look. There are only three wings in this building, and the lobby, and this main venue, and next door, Řetízek Theatre Hall. If you're lost, approach our volunteers. They can be identified by their grey badge. I'm sorry, I retract that. Approach people with a beige badge. They will assist you. All those of you who are have taken the interpretation or borrowed the interpretation headsets, please don't forget to return them after the morning session, because interpretation in the afternoon will not be simultaneous. You will not need those anymore, only for tomorrow, but you can pick them up again tomorrow morning. Now, more beautiful things at 6:30 in this very hall. We will see a beautiful performance, Imagine the Blue Eye, by our German and Indonesian colleagues. It will be very expressive, very artistic, and after the performance, there'll be buffet, a small buffet. Just a piece of important information, those of you who need a proper invoice. Against your registration fee, contact me, Maciej Lipski, by email after the conference, and I will raise the invoices for you, but I'm sorry, it can't be done today. And tomorrow we start at 8 o'clock. So let's enjoy each other, let's enjoy our company. Thank you very much for coming, and let's start. Can I ask Mr. Slavik and Salvo Petrucella, our first speakers, to come forward?
So the first presentation is going to be presented by Mr. Slavik, who is one of the founders of the Association of Art Therapies here in the Czech Republic. I think that every Czech knows him, because he is a very known person in this field, and he's going to speak about expression and expressivity. Good morning, everyone. I'm going to speak about expressivity, as you've already heard, because expression and expressivity are related to the title of today's conference, and that's why it may be useful to have a closer look at these terms. I'm sorry, I cannot interpret, as I cannot hear the speaker. We're very sorry, but there is some technical problem and we still cannot hear the speaker.
Ten funguje. Aha, tak halo. Šimone, teď tady dostávám informaci, že funguje tenhle ten mikrofon a ten je slyšet do stanice. Tak se nám přehodíme mikrofony. Jo, 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 jo. Jo. Dobře, tak tenhle ten mikrofon jde, vidíš, předávám panu Sladíkovi tento mikrofon.
Děkuji. Ano, to je takové složité, složité akce. Málo kdy bývá, že by aspoň tak.
I think it's quite common. There's always a technical problem everywhere, at least a small one. So what I've been saying, I was talking about Benedetto Croce and his knowledge of Darwin's research. He focused on the differentiation of spontaneous feelings and emotions, for example, the spontaneous expression of pain, from artistic expression. I think that this differentiation is of key importance because it is a social and culturally important issue as well. Croce also highlighted that the term of expression exceeds the framework of spontaneity. It is related to the way of speaking, which, and now I quote, gives feelings a theoretical form and transforms it into speech, songs, or forms. Croce's term feeling or emotion can be interpreted as the internal content, which is somehow personally urgent. From the expressively therapeutic point of view, an emotion or feeling is an internal impulse which sets psychological contents into motion and result in expressions. There's a nice Czech saying that says, what we've got in our hearts comes out of our mouths. In relation with the expression of emotions, Croce speaks about theoretic forms. What he means is the form that does not only depend on the immediate state or feeling or impression, but that expresses general experience. That's why expressive forms cannot be obtained only by spontaneous expressions, but we need to look for them, we need to discover them, and we also need to practice them and cultivate them. To find an apt expressive form requires certain efforts, or maybe we should say cultural efforts. So it's not as simple as when we just scream out, ouch. As Raymond Ryer says, the expressive language is articulated because it wants to communicate to the others its feelings, and not only the feelings, but also what evoked the feelings. All these interpretations can also be applied to artistic expressivity. But what should actually be the proportion in therapy between spontaneity and intentional cultural efforts? I think that this is a very important question at the theoretical level. And to be able to look at it closer, it is good to introduce the first couple of terms that I wanted to look at. The difference between a scream and an artistic act can be expressed by the expression of by the term of expression and evocation. Nelson Goodman, for example, highlights that evoked emotions are seldom those that are expressed. Here you can see the picture. This painting expressively expresses pain, but also many other things. There are no doubts that when we create or perceive artifacts, expression and evocation are applied at the same time. However, for expressive or art therapies, what is substantial is their mutual proportion in the particular work of art. A creative situation should be spontaneous enough to evoke internalized conflicts. It should, however, also exceed the spontaneous level to the extent that the subject should not be overwhelmed with emotions. That means that the person should be able to take a certain distance from his or her internal state and the image, the external form, to be able to look for the content. For example, we can express joy without feeling joy, and this is also part of the art of expression. The internal state in expressions does not necessarily have to correspond with the external manifestation, because the manifestations can also be simulated. And the simulation theory explains that simulation is something, or the ability to assign to another person a certain mental state and simulate it, that is, try it in the shoes of the other person. Here you can see this in this picture. So I'm trying to animate it now a bit. So you can see how the first person changes into the third person. So you just look at it from the point of view of a third person. You take a distance. So this is the so-called pretend modus. And at the same time, the person, of course, is aware of his or her relation to the other person. This is a slightly a funny picture, but I think that this is a situation that you all know from therapies. This also clearly shows that in expressions and in our therapies, we can lie and play. We can play with it. We can try various forms, and we can lie because we can just pretend that we are in the shoes of someone else. So art therapies are actually a kind of game, a play, where we can use the pretend modus, where we can use the make-believe style. Then, of course, the important question is, to what extent should we play so that we are still able to take a distance and to maintain the right distance? The psychoanalyst Daniel Stern says that, of course, the moments of meeting are very important, because in these moments of meeting, intersubjective emotional sharing of content is performed. So people share the content of the present moment. Like, for example, two dancers, although they both concentrate on the dance and on their internal feelings, they still keep the rhythm and they still follow the movements of the other. These moments are particularly valuable for the regulation of self-states because the partners have the feeling of balance. Both of them give the same to the other as they keep for themselves and as they take from the other. The moments of meeting are typical for expressive situations in which the client, together with the therapist, play at the edge between the first and third person. These are very emotionally beneficial, but they're also very valuable for the cognition process. In these situations, people have the feeling that they are mutually finding each other and that they are achieving the state of expressive harmony. Another important couple of terms that we would like to look at is expression against description.
As it shows, the difference here is not so unequivocal. These two terms often overlap with apparent ease. Let's take a look at this. It's a footage that was aired on TV. The Czech group Stohoven illegally hacked into television broadcasting and transposed the illusion of a nuclear reaction into a peaceful scenery. Obviously, a court action ensued and is still ongoing. But What's interesting for us is that the leader of this group highlighted the moment of inspiration. Croce focuses on learning through expressive contact, which he differentiates from learning through terms. Those things can be combined, but not interchanged. Obviously, to dance is something else than to talk about dancing. Croce's theory is similar in many arguments to that of Bertrand Russell. Bertrand Russell differentiated between knowledge of sensory learning to immediate learning. Where you need to experience or have some experiential knowledge of the subject. Obviously, describing through language, no matter how detailed it is, it's different than a direct experience of an object. And therefore, expressive or art therapy is different than therapy built on description. An impressive example of the differences and interdependencies of expression and description is shown in Chernitsky's literature, presented as a visual work. This is a static image. Expression in Chernitsky's work is brokered or facilitated by the lens or through the lens of the camera, where we see people. As people emerge, the description basically, description also is populated with more and more words, where until our vision is ultimately obscured. This is Andy Warhol's work, where colors are described or indicated by figures. For instance, imagine makeup, a few digits instead of a lipstick or eyeshadow. So the relationship between expression and and description can be expressed in non-interchangeability. You cannot substitute description for a direct experience. This applies also to the subjective level for facilitating subjective experience of something. If I want to have somebody else experience my experience, I need to express. Croce writes that there are two methods or three ways of doing that, expression and description. The differences between expression and description give rise to the argument that the author must either describe a full sensory experience or act out. See Duchamp's ready-made, we see the fountain here. The client who wants to tell his state of mind to the therapist will do best if they act it out or draw it or play it on an instrument. This is the best way expression is the best way how to make somebody else experience your experience. Descriptions can be aided by images of the object, but description is confined by the conventional space of the language. Therefore, it's not indifferent how to in relation to sensory experience. The same it can be interpreted as a description or as an expression. Madame Sauton described it as a descriptive component, as a content, and the expressive element as a style. The content and style, or the content and the form, can be expressed differently. For instance, take this face. The above image is the archaic linear image. The second is the archaic realistic style. On the right-hand side, we see contrasting images also of a woman's face. Could you attach styles to different to those different images? And finally, expression and fiction. Expression allows us to keep at arm's length a certain experience. That's why expression is the typical instrument of metaphor, because it puts into context one's personal experience with the body and the mind and its actions, and with the external appearances. Expression is human capability to create human real metaphors. Real metaphors are a special metaphor that represents not only the theme but also embodiment. Real metaphors can create the world which one can inhabit. For illustration, let's take a look at this picture, and let me quote a film reviewer. Not by coincidence, having seen the 3D fantasy Avatar, I often hear, I would love to go back to this world. I would love to go back and stay there for a long time. It's not, just note, not I want to go back, but I would like to go back, I would love to go back. This is what underlines my point. The film review only attests to my claim that expression has the power to create a fictional world. Avatar is a metaphor for a part of our dreams and secret wishes, our own world which we can retreat to. Like Fila said in his discourse about expression, or when Filovar wrote about the man creating and destroying the world in the context of psychotherapy. She wrote about psychotherapy. She might have written about expression. In this context, expression is a phenomenon which is focused on creating a fictional or virtual world as a stage as well as the auditorium. It's a way of creating a subject of desire or an object of desire. In expressive art therapy, you create a reality of the client, an image of the client's past. In schematic terms, you can see it here, a fictional artifact is full of potential meanings that provide a therapeutic motive for subsequent interpretation. Moving or threading the fine line between therapy and fiction, expression and fictions, like the theoretician Burio writes, it leads a person to create a sense for his life through the sense of artwork. Burio's words about art might be maybe applied to art therapy. Art therapy is also a way of looking for a meaning of life through creation. Expression is not a lie, therefore, but a culturally important phenomenon in which one gets a chance to embody otherwise intangible mental concepts and to move between the reality and one's own fictional world. It's a way of dreaming and wishing. And we should be expressing those dreams and wishes not only in the context of art therapy.
Can you now hear the interpreting? Is everything okay now? I would like to thank Mr. Jan Slavík And now we've got the rare opportunity to ask questions or present your insights, comments, and so on. There are not many occasions when Mr. Slavik could speak with us in this way. So now it is up to you. Now we've got time for questions. Can you hear the interpreting? I'm not sure whether this microphone works. Okay, it seems to be working. So now go for it. Now you really have a rare chance. Is there anything you would like to add to what you've just heard? Or is there anything that you would like to oppose, maybe? No one? Well, maybe then you can ask Mr. Slavik about something completely different.
Yes, I'm interested in what came through in translation. I'm not sure whether that word was accurate, that from time to time they use the word lying, to lie, instead of to pretend. And I'm wondering whether actually what was meant in your talk was pretending. That was my first point. Based on that, what I think is a contrast between conventional verbal psychotherapy and arts therapies is this journey from the reality of the everyday to the reality of the imagination. That once one's in the imaginative space, that's where the arts therapies come into their own.
Thank you, Sue Jennings. You're welcome.
Thank you for the question. First, let me get back to the lying and pretending. The fact that through expressions we are able to pretend is confirmed by the simulation theory. It is even said that it is important for little children to learn how to lie. And then the cultural context creates the difference. And of course, the difference is of major importance. It's the difference between pretending with a certain intention and lying as such. And then depending on the context, we can differentiate the two in greater detail. Art therapies suppose that expressions are related to full engagement and returns people back into their past or into the important moments of their lives. But art therapies do not suppose that people pretend something in the therapies. So that's how I understood the question. So I hope that I've answered it right. In art theories, there is a strict differentiation between the arts as a cultural phenomenon and what is called pretension or lying. So in this case, these two can definitely not be interchanged. As regards the second question regarding art therapies, in our cultural conditions of the Czech Republic, the differentiation is not that clear. Art therapies are often considered the same as expressive therapies. The model when the client creates himself or herself that is part of a work of art, and then subsequently the work of art is interpreted, as opposed to the model when there is no such interpretation, is from the point of view of the basic principle of expression identical. So there is no major difference between expression giving a certain information, and at the same time an expression, of course, takes you into the moment and shows you something, and then you can describe it verbally or work with it at the verbal level or not. So that's what I have to say about it, if that's enough. Děkuji vám, to byla velice jasná odpověď. Are there any other questions or any other insights or comments?
I think you bring up a question as to who interprets the art, whether it's the artist or the art therapist. If it's the art therapist, it amounts to major projection, and only the artist is the real authority on the created work.
So once again, as regards the interpretation of the work, I think that the artist does not necessarily have to be the only authority. If the work of art is related to the social context, then it does not necessarily have to be so. Because the author or the empirical author can be differentiated from the author himself. The empirical author is the person who created the piece of art or the work of art, and the subject of the work is the person that we interpret on the basis of the piece of work. We suppose that there's always a physical author or creator of the work of art, but we sometimes do not have to consider him when we perceive the piece of work or when we somehow deal with the piece of work. There's the idea that it does not have to be the artist who, as the only one, should be authorized to interpret the piece of art or work of art. There's, for example, an example from recent years. When, for example, Pythia in the Greek town of Delphs was also interpreted, although she was speaking through the mouth of the god. And of course, the interpretation then encountered a lot of problems. Everyone knew that the interpretation is the interpretation of the people around, not of Pythia herself. But that's why it was so interesting, because you know, it was always quite ambiguous, but it was interesting then to meet over the prophecies and discuss them and you know, try to figure out what they meant. Thank you very much for this answer. Now let me pass the floor to the next speaker. Let's now move on. I would like to introduce Salvo Petrucella, who is a drama therapist. He also does psychotherapy, and he also works in a theater. I think that he's a very interesting person coming from Italy, Palermo. Salvo also translates poetry into Italian, for example, William Blake. So he's really a very interesting person, and I'm sure you will enjoy his presentation.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Thanks to be here. And I'm very delighted to be in Prague again, in your beautiful city. So I want to tell my gratitude to the organizer for inviting me here, and especially to Beat and Victor, whom I had the chance to attend one of their workshop in the CART in London last year, and I enjoyed very much to be pushed in this very creative intermingling of all colors and sounds and words and actions, and we had really had a lot of fun, and I was very inspired by that. Well, my name is Salvo Pietruzzella, and I come from Italy, the place where we say ciao, to say hello to people. So I want to greet you again, saying ciao a tutti. Means hello to everybody. And in my professional life as a dramatherapist, I had the venture to run into two different situations where the four arts therapies work together side by side. The first is a mental health care day center in Palermo, my hometown, in Sicily, in the very south of Italy, where arts therapies are part of the overall therapeutic project. And the arts therapists interact with each other and with other professionals who care for the same group of clients. The second experience is in Lecco, in northern Italy, where I am a dramatherapy course leader at the Arts Therapy Training Center, where the four schools or the four different arts therapies are beginning to dialogue with the purpose to establish a common ground. Therefore, in recent years, I've been increasingly inquiring into my own experience and my theoretical background as a dramatherapist, looking for concepts that may connect with the other arts therapies and may contribute to the creation of a shared model. In this paper, I will deal with one of such concepts, namely that of creativity. Creativity is not a gift that only few talented people possesses. It is rather a fundamental feature of being a person. It is mother of possibility, of novelty, of change. And as change is a substance of which human life is made, creativity is the nourishment of our ability to grow and evolve. Forgetting it, excluding it, or even try to suppress it, leads to stiffness and homologation of human life. It is not by chance that tyrannies has always been hostile to the arts. A creative attitude is what allows us to consider different points of view about things, preserving us to cling to the one we see as the strongest or the most convenient, or even the simplest. In this sense, it is at the roots of critical awareness, because if we get used to examine and weight all the different interpretation of things, we become less inclined to accept as the truth what the power and mass media tell us every day, and more ready to express our opinions and engage in public life to affirm our rights. Yet, it is also at the roots of solidarity, because this attitude helps us to put ourselves in other people's shoes, taking into consideration their points of view and understand their reason. The latter argument is particularly important in the present historical age, when extraordinary migration shake old Europe, causing sometimes irrational reactions of fear and rejection, which may prelude to xenophobia and racism. as never before, we need to find creative solutions in order that a potential encounter of peoples does not become a civilization clash. However, creativity plays a key role also in the relationship of individuals with themselves. It is the impulse driving children to discover the world, allowing them to recognize new things and reconstruct them into themselves, conferring them a meaning. It is the willingness to accept and understand the continuous shifting of our own identity in time. Creative attitude helps us to find new answers to old questions, to find solutions to situations that looked like being irreparably paralyzed, redefining them and putting them into perspective, and guides us to tread unknown paths, discovering aspects of ourselves we ignored and resources we were not aware of. Experimenting with creativity allows people to recover their qualities of openness, flexibility, and awareness. The late Aldo Carotenuto, father of Jungian psychology in Italy, maintained that the assignment of any therapist is reviving the client's creative dimension, and continues, "I use the verb revive not casually. In fact, we can revive only what has been alive. This means that the creative dimension has always existed in our life, since it is a prerogative of humanity. Otherwise, we would not have the world we have." In arts therapies, this is even more emphasized. Just two striking quotations. Robert Landy, drama therapist: "The essential role of the drama therapist is to embody the creative principle and mirror it, to return it back to the client." Sean McNiff, art therapist: "Creative energy is activated through the art therapy experience, and when supported and guided, this energy finds its way to areas of need." And it is quite a common experience for many of us that when creative processes are set in motion, they can be gently directed towards healing. However, before going on presenting the creative process as emerging from my own drama therapy practice, I would like to introduce you an exceedingly creative artist, my favorite jazz musician, John Coltrane. We will listen to a fragment of the suite A Love Supreme, Coltrane's masterpiece. It starts with a gong and a shrill blare of the saxophone, sounding very much like a call to awakening. Immediately after, the bass begins to play a four-note hypnotic theme. Then the saxophone, John Coltrane's saxophone, enters into play and starts a challenging quest for peace, passing through harmony and chaos, becoming from time to time exulting and desperate, an intimate confession and an animal's roaring. At the end of the journey, it will eventually find what it was searching for, discovering that it was at its very point of departure. Then the saxophone stands down and the warm voice of John Coltrane himself joins, singing the theme along with the bass. Just 5 minutes listening. I would like you to listen to it with your mind and your heart, but especially with your body, as this kind of music has a particularly bodily resonance. So please, sit comfortably as you can, close your eyes, and notice what happens in your body when you listen to it. And start again. moment, start to relax. There's a problem with the password.
Just try to find it.
Damo, okay. It's the same. Yep. Yeah. Okay. You can start listening to this. You can open your eyes. Thank you. Thank you very much for your attention. Now, before going on, I would like to collect some impressions or images or sensations you had listening to this piece of music.
I was the first time relaxed after yesterday, 9 o'clock in the morning.
Not in any particular order, but expectation, joy, confusion, joy, expectation.
I breathed rain, I felt more alive while I was listening. I felt like moving.
Drifty and confused and then uncomfortable, and I needed to have my eyes open.
I saw a lot of grass at first, and then my home, and then there was a happening. A lot of people were there, and then at the end, it was me who came out, and I knew that it was me.
Relaxation, joy, just generally being quite happy. Well, speaking for myself, I don't really like this type of music because I can't play it. I think it's music mainly for the people who can play it.
Já teď nevím, pane Slavík, vy překládáte?
Jo.
I'm in a hurry, Salvo.
I envy those listeners who are not musicians and who can really enjoy music through listening to it. Because a professional, unfortunately, has a completely different way of listening to music.
I'm not a musician, so I could enjoy that side of it. So I was experiencing gentle inner awakening, I would call it.
Okay.
Okay, I think that's enough. Thank you very much. This confirms in my idea that people can't be indifferent to this music. You can love it or hate it. You can feel comfortable, very relaxed with it, or else very confused by this chaotic turning of the music. But it's impossible to be indifferent. And just some word about how this piece of music was composed. The suite was recorded in 1964, when John Coltrane was just coming out from a long period of addiction to drugs and alcohol, which had cost him the expulsion from Miles Davis' band. So in his new attitude, he felt the intimate need to express his gratitude to a higher power that helped him to overcoming the crisis, to help him overcome the crisis, and recovering inspiration. This internal attitude triggered his musical imagination, which started to take shape in a prayer-like theme first, the four notes, boom, 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 and then in the whole score of the suite. Eventually, the score was performed by Coltrane in his so-called classic quartet through a joint studio improvisation, in which all the musicians gave their individual contribution. Interestingly enough, although the score had many non-written parts to be completed in the very moment of the performance, the first take was perfect, and it is the masterpiece we now have. In this short anecdote, we can see the creative process at work, and we can identify some remarkable elements of the process itself. The first is what I call inner listening, the ability of noticing what happens in the inmost recesses of our soul, of listening to our emotions and feelings, as well as our needs, our discomfort, and our wishes. The second is imagination, which assists us in transforming the above insights in images. In this case, images are musical, but they can also be visual, bodily, or expressed by words. However, images must be organized, shaped, and controlled. Here comes the third element, which I have called productiveness, the ability to set up a structure that can be acknowledged and shared. The fourth element is spontaneity, which intervenes as a medium through the whole process, providing the energy to push it forward, transforming private images in actual sounds, colors, actions or words, and playing exhaustively with them. Of course, in the process, there's also the component of skill, that is, mastering the expressive language we choose. And John Coltrane was passing many hours a day practicing with his instrument. Let us now have a look at an ordinary drama therapy session at the mental health care center where I work. After a group warming up playing animals, Mario, a newcomer of the group, devises a scene. Mario is a mountain of a man, yet very timid and delicate. He's been attending the center for a month, coming out from a long seclusion in his room at home. The story he tells is about a shy tortoise who meets a whippy lizard and gets frightened, withdrawing into his shell. The lizard approaches the tortoise, explaining that it is not dangerous, and finally they become friends. Mario asks Vincenzo, the music therapist of the center, to play the lizard. Then he takes the big green cloth for the tortoise shell. He wears it as a mantle, but he feels unsatisfied, and he looks around for help. The whole group volunteers, and everybody goes under the cloth, becoming the tortoise body, while Mario is the head. The dialogue starts being at the same time emotional and philosophical. At the end, he wants to try how it is like to be the lizard, and the scene is repeated, reversing roles. At the end, when we sit down and talk, Mario thanks the whole group for the help they have given to him in finding his lizard, and proposes a new story, a sequel of the first. The lizard is hunted by a serpent and finds a provisional shelter in his tortoise friend's shell. Cheers and laughter of the group. Notwithstanding the differences, we can recognize in this event the same elements of the creative process we have seen in the birth of the music we have been listening to. Mario has found an image to express his deep self-perception, has reworked it into a story, and has played it out, spontaneously improvising with his fellows. The whole process has been refreshing and renovating, allowing people to connect to each other and experience Mario's story in a shared stage. Dramatic language has been the medium through which Mario's inner listening, imagination, spontaneity, and productiveness could play together, producing a unique creative gesture, which not only served him to express and disclose himself to the others, but also to build up a living metaphor into which the group could mirror itself. In sharing such a metaphor, he practically experimented with relationships, improving his interpersonal abilities that were lost during his year of withdrawing. I suppose that such a process frequently occurs in your everyday practice of all the four arts therapies. Creativity turns into healing whenever a client paints a picture, makes a sculpt, a sound, or a gesture, giving shape to a symbol of transformation, which can provide insight and guidance. The sensitive use of the language of arts in arts therapies can assist people in rediscover their hidden creativity and in directing it towards the creation of transformative metaphors. At the same time, recovering the creative dimension affects in a deep way clients' attitudes towards the world, improving their curiosity, their openness, and last but not least, their sense of humor. Accordingly, I believe that in order to help people reawaken their creativity, we must learn to use ours. It has to be nourished and cared for. We must train and exercise it. And I sense that this occasion of meeting, of creative encounter, like this conference, are a gift to keep our creativity alive. Thank you very much.
So, thank you so much, Salvo. And are there any questions? Jsou nějaké dotazy pro Salva? Pocity.
Just joking with feelings.
Má někdo nějakou otázku?
You are a drama therapist and you used music like a creative process or like an example. So are you using both like music and drama therapy in your practice or?
No, I don't use music because I don't feel prepared to use music in a proper way. But I am very passionate of music. So I like very much to listen to music, to play a little on my own. And I studied very, very thoroughly John Coltrane's music because it's my favorite musician. So I thought that this could be quite a clear and striking example how creativity works. But sometimes I collaborate with a music therapist and we do things together. Me, I take care of the part of the drama, and he takes care of the part of music.
Ještě nějaký dotaz? Sue?
Thank you, Salva, for a lovely talk. But I think that question raises one of the big issues that at some level will be talked about at this conference. Because I think different countries have different divisions between the arts therapies. I know in England it is very strict that if you're an art therapist, therefore you cannot do make use of music and so on. Whereas I know a lot of art therapists do cross over into the arts in terms of their practice. It happens. But the public policy is no, it doesn't happen. And I think maybe if we can all relax about our own particular discipline and just see how actually they all are nurturing and nourishing each other, I think it's very important. And just to give the audience an interesting example from Romania, who have now got their drama therapy training accredited, the only country in the world to have it accredited by the College of Psychologists, but it's not only drama therapy, it's a qualification in play therapy and drama therapy. So we're beginning to see some public crossing over the disciplines.
Well, I think it is a very, very important issue, this, the problem of the borders and that of the interactions. I suppose that one must know deeply his its own way of expression, but I think that for all the art therapies, it's very important to know something about the other arts, as arts first. No, for example, I suggest always to my students to go and listen to the music, go to art exhibitions, and go to the dance performance and so on, but also to try to interact with the other, because sometimes, like the example I quoted before of the workshop done by Beate and Victor, sometimes joining two or more arts gives an extra meaning, an extra level. No, the sum is more than the whole is more than the sum of the single parts. No? So I think it is very important to connect the arts therapy, to have a dialogue, and to discover what the other means and what the others are doing. Thank you very much.
So thank you again. So thank you so much for your beautiful speech. And
gentlemen, now we are starting in a half an hour break. Keep your interpretation headsets on you for the duration of the break. Refreshments are served in the foyer, some coffee, tea, a little something to eat. If you don't like what we have laid out for the conference participants, you can buy something from the bar, obviously. Enjoy the break, and we'll start again at 11 o'clock with some song and dance.